Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
We have most of the technology we need to combat the climate crisis, and most people want to see more action. So what has been holding us back? Well, let's try to get some answers now. We're joined by Mike Berners-Lee, author of A Climate of Truth, which is out today. And Mike is also professor at Lancaster University. Mike, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much.
Now, at the start of this book, you say that we have the technology, we also have the know-how and the resources to decarbonize, but we just haven't done it. Why, in your view?
Well, I've looked at this question pretty seriously now because we've had 29 climate COPs over three decades, and every year carbon emissions are still going up, not down. So I've been trying to ask, you know, what are the reasons behind the reasons why we're not getting anywhere, and the reasons behind, you know, bad decisions that get taken. And the conclusion I've come to very clearly is that they all have flat out dishonesty at their root. So the climate COPs have been sabotaged by cynical vested interests from the fossil fuel industry, acting in a very clearly dishonest way. Mm-hmm. And in my country as well, I come to the same conclusions about, for example, discussions over whether we have a coal mine, open up a new coal mine. Actually, they have deceit at their root. So
why then continue with COP? Climate activists, people who actually and genuinely want to see change, will continue to travel to COP and participate in it. Why?
Well, it's not that we don't need COPs, it's just that we need to get them working properly. And if anything good came out of COP29, it was a much wider realization that we've got to stop these conferences being sabotaged by very well-funded, very cynical corporate vested interests whose intent is simply to make sure that they don't succeed in leaving the fossil fuel in the ground.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you say this is an eruption of deceit unlike anything you've known in your lifetime. Have you been able to establish how it's become acceptable to distort facts and present alternative truths? In other words, how are they getting away with it?
Well, because we've been lazy, collectively. There's been a kind of experiment with post-truth, you know, around the world. And we're seeing it going on, you know, very, very seriously in the United States at the moment. But, you know, certainly in other places as well. In the UK, we've had a very serious kind of experiment of post-truth, where we've just kind of normalized the idea that politicians lie, it's how the job's done. And that's absolutely not the case. But the really good news is that we can reframe this. Okay, so we can treat deceit very, very differently. And just by the way, what I mean by deceit is much more than just lying. I mean, any attempt that anybody makes to make another person believe something that they don't actually believe is the case. So in my book, I've got a kind of whole taxonomy of deceit because it's quite a sophisticated art form. But we can insist on a different culture. We can say, look, if we get one clear-cut case of a politician deliberately misleading the public, then that is abuse. And it tells us we can't trust them. It tells us we can't trust them on anything at all. And it also tells us, actually, that we can't trust any of their colleagues who stay quiet in the knowledge that they've been deceitful. Now, we can insist on that value. And to the extent that we succeed in insisting on that value, we will raise the quality of decision making, not just about climate, but about everything we might care about, every social issue and every environmental issue. So that's what my book's calling for. And it's just like, it's so obvious. It's just like, you know, we mustn't have deceitful politicians. Duh. Mm-hmm.
But you know, Mike, you did mention the United States and what's been happening there under the Trump administration. I mean, do you agree that it's more difficult now than ever before to call on people to stand up and call out misrepresentation on climate change and greenwashing?
Yes, I agree that it is becoming more difficult, and we have to wake up and stand up for it now. It's not as difficult in Ireland right now as it is in the United States. And so take your opportunity while you've got it. You know, in the UK, we're paying a price for our experiment with post-truth and for normalizing the idea that it's okay for politicians to mislead the public. I like to think we've moved slightly in a better direction. But, you know, we need to radically raise the standards. And anyone who's feeling like, you know, there's nothing I can do to change the world, actually, you know, I think a point of greatest agency is just to be absolutely insistent on standards of honesty from our politicians, from our media, and also from the businesses that serve us.
Okay, I'm just interested in what you say about, you know, your sense that you've moved on from the experiment in the United Kingdom. You have a Labour government whose focus is solely on driving economic growth. Now, that doesn't really tally with addressing climate change.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, it's not as if our Labour government is perfect, but I do think that there's clear water between them at the moment and the very, very depressing government that we had before that was literally deceiving the public knowingly, routinely, every day. So, you know, the book I've written is explicitly not party political. Or even though it does call out some examples, you know, very explicitly. But this takes me to a broader principle, which is that you may find that you have to vote for the least unfit politician that is available. And if that's the case, it's very important that you do have that vote. We're never going to have we'll raise the standards a long way very quickly if we always vote for the least unfit politician.
Is it easier to distort the truth when the implications of inaction are intangible for some in some parts of the world still and impenetrable for others? Because explaining the impacts of climate change, it can be a complex business.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's very easy to distort the truth. And it's very easy to say things that you know aren't true on the radio. It takes like 10 minutes to go on a radio call and say some things that sound plausible, but that you know aren't true. On the other hand, putting that back in the bag takes a lot of effort. You know, I can think of examples where in the UK, where politicians have gone on air, they've said things that aren't true, and then it's taken academics days and days to carefully document how this is a load of nonsense. But even when you've done that, you haven't got the message out to the public. So given that it's so easy to spread mistruths and so difficult to put them back in the bag, we have to create a very high price for being caught out having deliberately misled in any way at all. And the way that we achieve that high price is that we say, OK, if we catch one example of a politician deliberately misleading us, that tells us they're not on their side. They're not on our side. If they were on our side, they wouldn't do that to us. So that tells us they're in the wrong job. And it also tells us that any other politicians who don't call them out on it are also not fit for the role they're in either. And by having that multiplier effect, we can actually create a climate of honesty, even though deceit is so increasingly easy.
Mm-hmm. Just on the timeline here, I mean, there are those who would say it's too late to get the deniers to face climate change and then therefore too late to confront climate change in a meaningful way.
Well, we have to face the fact that we haven't yet confronted climate change in a meaningful way. And I don't say this lightly, but the rate of carbon emissions is still going up every year, not down. So after 29 COPs, we are making the climate worse by a larger amount every year than we made it worse the year before. So that doesn't tell us we can't get on top of this, but it does tell us we absolutely need to raise our game and try something different. And that's what takes me to my search for the point of greatest leverage for those of us who do finally want to see some change. And what I've identified is that if we can get the deceit out of the system, we can start to make the kinds of decisions that we need to. I mean, the whole climate denial movement, you know, is pushed by people who know that climate change is a big deal, but they also know that it gets in the way of their profits. And then that gets propagated out, and some people believe it, and it starts to be a narrative, you know, that is genuinely believed by some people. But if we can take the deceit out of the system, then the climate denial narrative will just drop away.
Mm-hmm. So the responsibility lies with voters and with the media, essentially.
Yeah. It absolutely lies with voters, but it very strongly lies with the media. So this is my message to you, would be, you know, if you find an example of a politician misleading the public, and it doesn't have to be about climate. The book's called The Climate of Truth, but it applies to anything you might care about, any environmental issue or any social issue, whether it's electricity bills or inequality or the healthcare or anything. If you find that a politician has misled the public, hold their feet to the fire. Now, don't let them off the hook until they've at the very least get given a very contrite apology. They need to pay a price for deceit. And in the UK, we just let that go completely for a while, and it was really pretty depressing.
Mike, thank you very much for joining us. Mike Berners-Lee, author of A Climate of Truth, which is out now.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.